McGill Daily of The Daily.
I'm McGill Daily.
Hi, I'm calling from The McGill Daily. Can I ask you some questions?
This is a little bit problematic.
News. Could I see you for a second?
We're going to cap this.
News, can you dummy?
Did that story come in yet?
Editorial's in 5 minutes.
McGill Daily.
Unfit to print.
You're listening to Unfit to Print, a McGill Daily and CKUT news collaboration. I'm your host, Chantal Schultz. Unfit to Print is a student-produced, bi-weekly show that brings the latest of McGill and Montreal news. First, we'll hear interviews with two migrant workers and activists, Viviana Medina and Nia Ladode, who attended the Montreal premiere of Migrant Dreams on October 17th. Migrant Dreams is a documentary film by Min Suk Lee about migrant workers in Canada and Canada's temporary foreign worker program. It focuses on the experiences of a small group of Indonesian women migrant workers in Leamington, Ontario. After that is an interview with Aaron Sobat, the Student Society of McGill University, SMU, VP University Affairs. Sobat discusses the recommendations SMU and the Postgraduate Student Society, PGSS, have made in their consultation report following their 8 focus group sessions about the draft policy against sexual violence that the administration released to the student body on September 12th. Sobat discusses how the draft of the policy was going to be presented for information at McGill Senate, which happened last week, and what the next steps are for the policy. But first, headlines. The Association of McGill University Support Employees, AMUSE, the main union that represents casual or temporary employees at McGill, most of whom are students, held a special general assembly on October 20th. Among the discussed issues were the ongoing negotiations with McGill regarding AMUSE's collective agreement and the state of the union, and attendees also voted on a strike mandate. Since May 2015, AMUSE has been working to negotiate its second collective agreement with McGill. At the General Assembly, AMUSE members passed a strike mandate, which would mean members could use tactics up to going on strike, as AMUSE's current negotiations with McGill have reached an impasse, according to Claire Michaela, the president of AMUSE. AMUSE's bargaining priorities include improvements to the work-study program, a $15 minimum wage, accurate job descriptions for workers, and seniority and benefits for casual workers. SMU Legislative Council met on October 20th. There were guest presentations by Deputy Provost Student Life and Learning Olivier Dines about mental health at McGill, one from the Library Improvement Fund Commissioner, and also a report from SMU VP University Affairs Aaron Sobat regarding unpaid internships at McGill. 6 motions were passed. These included a motion to endorse CKUT's existence referendum question, a motion regarding the Midnight Kitchen's existence referendum question, and a motion regarding the free menstrual hygiene products policy, which would have products including pads and tampons be available in healthy McGill kiosks on campus, and in both gendered and gender-neutral bathrooms. On October 19th, the Arts Undergraduate Society, AUS, Legislative Council met and endorsed AMUSE, discussed an upcoming prof talk, and had committee reports. Council passed a motion to endorse AMUSE's bargaining priorities. The AUS motion mandates it to publish a statement in support of these priorities on its website, listserv, and social media channels. The motion passed with 2 abstentions. AUS VP Academic Eric Partridge announced during his report to Council that an upcoming prof talk had been canceled due to a room booking problem. AUS VP Internal Kira Smith also told Council in her report that the prof talk had been canceled because of a room booking issue. A few counselors voiced concerns that the reasons for the cancellation were not transparent, and after the meeting, AUS Equity Commissioners Jade Altal and Leah Damo explained in a statement to The Daily that an art student had expressed concerns to them about the prof talk because the invited professor was accused of having sexual relations with students, but they noted that it had never been formally published. Now you'll hear interviews with 2 migrant workers and activists who were present at the Montreal premiere of Migrant Dreams, a documentary film by Min Suk Lee about the temporary foreign worker program in Canada and the conditions that migrant workers live and work in. The film was shot over 3 years and centers on a group of Indonesian women working in greenhouses in Leamington, Ontario. In the question and answer period after the film, the director spoke about Canada's apartheid labor system, the importance of status on arrival for migrant workers, and the connection between the temporary foreign worker program and Canadian colonialism. Also present in the question and answer were Viviana Medina, a Mexican woman activist and migrant worker and one of the founders of Mexicans United for Regularization, and Neil Ladode, who came to Canada as a migrant worker from Indonesia and now works with the Temporary Foreign Workers Association. First, we'll hear an interview with Viviana Medina. What did you think of the film?
I think it's great. Put in the screen the situation of temporary foreign workers, most for the women, because I think the problematic around the women is still in the shadows. So I was so happy, and it was so powerful film.
So you spoke about your own experience as a worker here in Canada.
Yes. Could
you speak more about that?
I speak like a woman, like an immigrant, and when I came here in 2006, I came like I don't know how is the word, asylum, yeah. So I asked him for asylum, so I was denied, and at the same year. So, but after that, I decided I came to Mexico, but after I came again here, and I stayed for a while, like 3, 4, 6 months, and after I'm go back to Mexico, and like this. So after the border was closed, the border of Mexico, Canada. So after that, I decided to stay without papers, without my family. So I did all kind of jobs. So I know very well that the conditions are very bad, the money that you receive is not enough for, you know, you send money to your country and you keep nothing almost. So it's very difficult and hard to pay your stuff, you know, your own food and rent and everything. Plus, you have to handle the condition at work, no? So you are a target to everyone. You suffer abuses, sexual abuses or harassment, sexual harassment. So, I mean, your situation is very vulnerable. So I watched this film, I was it's very it's touching, you know. Yeah.
What would you say to people who want to support migrant workers in Canada?
Yeah, I want to say that it's very important to know what the situation is, to know about what happened in the manufacturers inside. The manufacturers, the restos, because it's very important to know what they are eating, what they are dressing, you know, and how the condition are about with the workers. So it's very important to know and be solidarity with them.
And would you say that your experience here in Quebec is similar to the experiences of the workers that we saw tonight in Ontario?
Yeah, because I passed when I came to Canada after I was denied my asylum was the night. I just came for a season, you know, like 3-4 months. So I was not part of the program, the temporary foreign workers, officially, but I was there, you know, in the same place with them. So, it's the same condition. We were together, you know, we were together. So I know very well the condition because I was there with them.
You just heard an interview with Viviana Medina, who spoke about the film Migrant Dreams and her experiences as a Mexican woman migrant worker in Canada. Now we'll hear from Neil Ladode, who also remarks on the film and on his experience, as well as the organization he's a representative of, the Temporary Foreign Workers Association. What did you think of the film tonight?
I'm thinking really powerful inspiration and also colorful at the same time. Yes, I think these three words, triple word that I could pop up in my mind.
What has your experience been here in Canada? You said that you are you also were a migrant worker.
Yes. Yeah. So it's really a commoning problem where I see in film, like whatever status you come as a temporary, you will end up the same block. You have a problem commoning, yeah, because of the system. So it's systemic problem that is provoked by the intentionally system, like under temporary foreign workers. So it's in their film, like you actually is not as say dream, because when you pay, how you get there is not something like dream. It's terrible that how program actually has been abused, and then there is no monitoring. At the same time, from sending country, so both is because of the forced migrant, right? Forced migrant is not only because of economy, it's politic, persecution, and that is what the film talk about it. Sustainable economic that need to be more and more like nil. It's not gonna separate with the how the globalization of neoliberalization and also profitization, and climate change inequality. So that's all. It's really a topic global that everywhere happen now.
Can you talk a bit about the organization that you're a representative for?
Yes, we are defending the right of the temporary foreign worker itself. So we working along with them. We support with temporary foreign worker, like defend the right of workers, temporary foreign workers specifically. So migrant workers as well. And the organization that Temporary Foreign Workers Association is trying to continue to support that we doing a lot of, it's not like overnight, but it's starting earlier before. So it's in like starting like when I start to get involved with the center in 2011, and then we are able to build organization institutionally in 2013, November 2013. So along this, a lot of work to do, like we create focus group, committee, and then reach out where we are, who we are, what is our vision. That's all, and then we are able to launching the organization, and then from there we have more to do actually. Yeah, so basically is OP, working in on progress. Yeah, working on progress, and working along with this is sometimes is quite difficult because we have also limitation and challenging. Yeah, we are mostly have the case like to catch up the case who come with us, but with the reach out working support group, we can reach out and go all the to the field like a task force. And that is also a challenge because we work mostly volunteer.
You just heard interviews with migrant workers and activists, Neil Ladode and Viviana Medina, about the film Migrant Dreams. Up next is an interview with Aaron Sobat, the SMU VP University Affairs. Sobat discusses the recommendations SMU and PGSS have made in their consultation report following the focus group sessions they held about the policy draft against sexual violence that the administration released to the student body last month. This follows the administration's withdrawal of support for the student-led sexual assault policy working group that had been working on an intersectional, pro-survivor policy for the last 3 years. The draft of the sexual violence policy, as well as the reports by SMU and PGSS, and the administration's report based on the feedback it received, were presented for information at McGill Senate last week. At Senate, Provost and Vice Principal Academic Christopher Manfredi presented the results of the feedback that the administration had received on the online form of the draft policy.
What is the history of the sexual violence policy at McGill, and what has SMU's involvement been?
Sure. So, I mean, there's been kind of student advocacy for a standalone sexual assault or sexual violence policy for quite a number of years now, at least since the 1990s, coming from SACOMS. But I think what really catalyzed a lot of student activism was the case in fall 2013 that came to light of three members of the Redmond football team being charged with sexual assault and forcible confinement of a Concordia student. And that led to a number of groups on campus kind of coming together and putting forward a proposal for a policy, and then deciding to kind of come together in a working group to write that policy themselves. A number of drafts. They went through a number of drafts, and in the spring, when it was brought back to the administration, negotiations kind of broke down, and it was rejected, essentially. There was an open letter released with a number of demands in April that got a lot of traction, and what ended up happening was over the summer, starting in May, the Associate Provost of Policies, Procedures, and Equity, Angela Campbell, released a university or an administration draft policy against sexual violence, which they then were consulting different groups over the summer, different like associations on campus, for some initial feedback before launching this community-wide consultation period in September.
And then SMU and PGSS have both had focus groups, is that correct?
Yeah, so the administration set up like an online feedback form to receive anonymous comments. They were also accepting feedback by email. We felt that it was important to create some other opportunities for students to give feedback, and particularly because it can be hard to give feedback on a policy, you know, a several page long policy without some sort of more structured process. So we actually put in a request to the Office of the Provost for funding to organize these focus groups, which we received. We were able to organize them in collaboration with SACOMS. So they were all facilitated by two trained facilitators who received like an honorarium. And we tried to have them at multiple locations across campus. We even have them on that campus, which is great. And a number of them were closed specifically for survivors of sexual violence.
So what kinds of things came out of these focus groups that are in your report?
Yeah, so we were able to produce a pretty detailed report. I think it's about 10 pages with 28 recommendations in seven categories. And I think as a theme, there was really a lack of clarity reading through the policy on what kinds of procedures it was laying out, particularly because it doesn't set out to kind of change existing procedures and response procedures like the Code of Student Conduct for discipline, for example. It really tries to centralize disclosures and reports. But I think because of that, there's not a clarity right now reading through it of what kinds of options are really available to survivors who might want to access those policies. So finding ways to both still centralize that process so that it's not required that an individual be fully familiar with all of those policies or navigate them themselves, but still give a sense or a summary of what kind of steps are possible through those existing frameworks. Really being more explicit about the resource commitments being made. And we've seen now in the documents going forward to Senate, the actual delineation or naming of a kind of centralized standalone office for sexual violence response, education, and support measures. As well, we know that at least one new staff member is being hired to support that office in addition to the existing staff under the Dean of Students office. So that's encouraging. And I think also a need for clarity about some of the limitations of what the university could do. There are phrases in the draft about the role of the university's institutional obligations when it comes to confidentiality, for example, and possible situations that could require them to breach confidentiality. And I think that the current language for a lot of students reading through is quite alienating because it doesn't give an accurate sense of where the university might have to disclose, for example, an issue that's not the survivor. So really some more precision in the document itself, I think, is needed.
Mm. So can you talk about what's going to happen at Senate this week in relation to this?
Yeah, so the policy is being presented for information for about a half hour. It's not designed as a structured discussion. I think it will be presented initially by the provost, with the associate provost available to answer questions. There's been a lot of talk throughout the feedback process of concerns raised that there will be pushback or that it doesn't account enough for due process and things like that. And so we're kind of waiting to see what concerns, I guess, come up from the community. I mean, as students, we have our own, and we really are going to be advocating for the priorities outlined in the report. But we are, I guess, interested to see and to get a better picture of where some of the questions or misconceptions lie and continue to lie with senators, and particularly with faculty members. Because that really is the culture that we need to be targeting in terms of education and awareness. So I guess on the one hand, it's an opportunity to do some of that education, albeit in a very kind of formal setting. It's also an opportunity to know the concerns that still need to be addressed in terms of advocating for these priorities. And yeah, finally, an opportunity to ask clarification questions and continue to push for the changes that we do need to see based on the consultations that we've done.
Right. And then what are the next steps or the next possible steps after this?
Yeah, so we have a number of meetings scheduled with various senior administrators. The Dean of Students actually just came to our Student Senate Caucus meeting this past Monday, which is where our student senators meet every week. And next Monday, the Associate Provost, as well as the Provost, will actually be attending. So that will be another opportunity to discuss some of the details. But certainly myself and the PGSS Equity Commissioner, who have been very involved, are meeting regularly with them. The university also employed a couple of consultants to help with processing the feedback that they received, and that's the other report that's going forward to Senate is kind of a summary of the anonymous online feedback that was submitted. And I think those consultants are going to be meeting with students and then as well some of the other feedback groups towards the end of the month or at the beginning of November. So we're really going to take as many opportunities as we can get to try and carry forward the priorities that have been identified by our members and to advocate or negotiate for including those changes in the policy. So we're thinking a lot about actually what the report does is it identifies specific policy articles where these changes could be made. So really going through the draft and working or communicating with the administration over how those changes can potentially be implemented. The revised draft will be going forward to Senate for an approval vote either for the November Senate or the December meeting, because there is a commitment from the administration to pass a policy by the end of 2016. But the other thing that's been built into the policy is a provision for kind of a comprehensive review of the issue of sexual violence on campus, which really goes beyond the scope of this policy because it's an opportunity to address and hopefully revise some of these other existing policies and procedures, such as the Code of Student Conduct, which addresses the disciplinary process, or the policy on harassment, sexual harassment, and discrimination prohibited by law, which outlines kind of recourse measures for sexual harassment, all of which are kind of at play in the context of this policy because they're kind of the procedures on the back end that the centralized office would be able to use for responding to reports made by survivors. So it's really important that we ensure that those procedures also align with the pro-survivor framework and really do uphold the values that are being espoused by this policy. And we have a number of recommendations in the report as well about that review, for example, that it should be conducted by a committee that includes qualified students, staff, faculty, as well as external experts from community or nonprofit organizations to participate in really looking at where the issues are on campus and probably putting together some sort of longer-term implementation, education, and response plan from the university.
You just heard an interview with Aaron Sobat about the current state of the policy against sexual violence at McGill. That's all for this edition of Unfit to Print on CKUT 90.3 FM. Make sure to tune in next week to hear our next episode. And in the meantime, check out our previous coverage and podcasts at mcgilldaily.com/podcast or pick up a print copy on stands now.
Unfit to Print.